This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This episode is brought to you by Say. Say is one makeup brand you need to be using if you love that effortless, glowy, no-makeup makeup look. Exclusively at Sephora, Say is certified clean and planet positive, going above and beyond to make sure each product is skincare-packed, high-performing, and sustainable. They have several award-winning products, like their Glowy Super Gel and Slip Tint Tinted Moisturizer that hydrate and brighten skin for a dewy, sexy look. Shop the Say collection now at Sephora.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're going to talk about COVID and schools. And we will start with Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Walensky, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. Great to be back with you. Thanks.
So first of all, let's just dive right into some of the CDC's latest recommendations for schools. One of the things is the recommended reduction of quarantine period to 5 days. Can you just quickly explain why that is?
Well, maybe it would be helpful first to rewind and say, you know, one of the highest priorities here has to be to keep our children in school. We recognize that. I've frequently said schools have to be the last place to close and the first place to open. And so really it's with that priority in mind. And I think it's probably also important to remind people that we were able to keep over 99% of schools open for in-person learning across the country during the Delta wave. And that was actually before we had pediatric vaccination. So here we are now in a very large Omicron wave. And what we're working to do is make sure that we can retain those children being safely in school and teachers being safely in school. Now, what we did when we updated our isolation and quarantine guidance, and I remind you that isolation is for people who've been infected and quarantine is for people who've been exposed. For isolation, we were standing on the shoulders of years of data that had now demonstrated that most of your infectivity is really in those days, a day or two before you have symptoms and the 2 to 3 days after you have symptoms. So it was that isolation time that we shortened and said, really, if you're feeling better after 5 days, that you can return to activities. If your fevers are gone, your symptoms are gone, you can return to your activities as long as you're wearing a mask. It turns out for quarantine, we actually have updated guidance as well for schools. And what we're really trying to do here again is to limit time out of school and have kids back in school. And we have a new really promising strategy called Test to Stay, where if you've been exposed, but you are able to do frequent testing, that you don't need to quarantine, but you can instead come to school as long as you're doing this frequent testing.
Okay. So then the quarantine period of 5 days is for people who have not been infected but exposed, are you saying that that does not apply anymore if the testing program's in place?
If the testing program is in place, then one could say instead of quarantining that you could do this test to stay program. And that what that means is a test every other day or a test twice a week for those who've been exposed. And what we've shown in several scientific papers now is that our children, when we do that, and our children and our teachers, when we do that test to stay protocol, not only are they safely in school, not only are there not really disease outbreaks associated with that protocol, but we've saved now hundreds of thousands of person days children in school because there's this test to stay protocol in place.
Now, if I understand correctly, though, if you're vaccinated and boosted, and you're very much protected from severe disease and from hospitalization, more importantly. So I wonder if even is test to stay even necessary for children who have been vaccinated?
Well, so we have information on test to stay and boosting for our older adults. For quarantine for our older adults who are eligible for boosting. I think really important here is something that you're commenting on and something that we've been working really hard on. And that is currently in our demographic of children between the ages of 5 to 11, our grade school children. Right now, we have about 19% of them who fully received their primary series. And so vaccination absolutely has to be an important part of our layered prevention strategies to keep our schools safe, to keep our children safely in them and our teachers safely in them. And as you note, for our test to stay protocol, we're actually not discriminating between vaccine status until we get more and more children vaccinated.
Okay. But let me ask you about that, because so we have vaccinations available, fully approved vaccinations available for adults. The Pfizer vaccine for children is still approved under EUA, not full FDA approval. It's the only one for kids thus far. There are some parents out there who wonder about overall, like, aren't actually, in a sense, schools some of the safest places for kids? Like, I was looking at Professor Joe Allen at the Harvard School of Public Health, the Chan School there at Harvard, was saying recently, and he said the evidence of the low risk to kids has been consistent throughout the pandemic with each variant. He said hospitalization rates has hovered at less than 1 per 100,000 through the Alpha wave, the Delta wave, and even the Omicron wave. And that's important context because, you know, according to Professor Allen, that's a level of risk that we accept all the time for kids.
Yeah, I think that this is actually really important to understand. So, of course, with the Delta wave and even with the Omicron wave, we've seen increased rates of hospitalizations among our children, some of the highest rates of hospitalizations than we've seen through this pandemic. But, of course, we've seen more disease in our communities throughout this pandemic with Omicron now as well. And we are still now just learning about the severity of Omicron versus Delta. And it took us some time to understand Delta versus Alpha. But I think the thing that's really important to understand now is we have given hundreds of millions of doses of these vaccines, actually billions around the world. And we have given millions in our children over the age of 5. And that is really one of the reasons why we have spent so much time in our advisory committee to immunization practices, demonstrating the data publicly and transparently, showing the data of how safe these vaccines truly are. We still have a lot to learn about these variants with regard to how sick it is getting our communities, how the impact of long COVID, the impact of this multi-system inflammatory syndrome in our children. And so given the incredible safety of these vaccines that we've publicly displayed and publicly shown, we really are working to make sure that we get our children vaccinated.
Are you concerned, though, that CDC guidance and overall fear out there is still leading to children unnecessarily missing school, right? I mean, we hear frequently from teachers saying, I'm afraid, I do not feel safe in schools. But I was looking at the CDC websites just this morning, citing like a dozen different studies from 2020 to now, showing that transmission rates in schools is negligible, but it's really correlated to how much, you know, community transmission rates are. But schools are safer than their communities. So can you think of any reason, though, why it might still be appropriate ever to close schools or revert to remote learning, which is still happening in some districts?
Yeah, it's really important. We, you know, as we update our guidance and as we provide more and more science and as we learn more and more about these, the variants that keep throwing us curveballs, we update the science and we provide guidance that has to be, applicable to across the country, you know, urban schools as well as rural schools, as well as Navajo, Indian country, throughout the world, throughout the country. That said, I go back to what I said early with the fall of 2021. We were able to safely keep our children in school with our layered prevention strategies during the Delta surge. 99% of our schools are open, were open during that time, and they were safely open. And what we could see through the science of that that time was that if schools chose not to use masks, for example, those schools were more likely to have to close due to outbreaks. So what we have seen time and time again is if we impose these layered mitigation strategies, and I would say now vaccine is one of them, that we can vaccinate our children and our staff, that we can put these masks in place. And even when during a time where we have so much transmission, we are able to keep our children safely in school. And that's really the purpose of the guidance, is to provide that menu of things that can and should be done in order to keep those schools safely open. And I entirely agree with you that that is really our highest priority, is to make sure schools are safe in-person learning environment for teacher and student alike.
But are they safe, though? They are safe. Schools are safe, are they not?
When practicing the layered mitigation strategies, the schools are absolutely safe.
Then why do you think teachers keep saying they don't feel safe?
There's a lot of disease out there. There's a lot of disease in the community. And so, you know, I can't speak to any given school as to whether those layered prevention strategies are actually in place. But that was really the purpose of our guidance, to say, are students and teachers vaccinated? Are masks being used? Is the test to stay or test to play policies being used? Are ventilation strategies being used? You know, all of the things, we've had $10 billion that have gone out to schools to be able to use testing as a prevention strategy. And all of these things in place provide those layers that give schools a really safe place to be.
Mm. Dr. Walensky, we've just got about 2 minutes left with you here. This has been a rough time for the CDC for several years now and the Biden administration, because people keep saying they are confused by CDC guidance and that there's chaos out there. What's your response to that?
I have a responsibility to review rapidly emerging data, oftentimes before it is peer-reviewed, to use the scientific expertise of the agency to follow those data, sometimes imperfect, sometimes gray, and to look at the epidemiology of what's happening and to provide guidance in the context of what is implementable and what's feasible across jurisdictions around the country. That's complex. It's sometimes scientifically gray, and it sometimes requires redirection when a new variant comes. So that's the responsibility of me and of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And it's an imperfect time right now. And what I would say is we are working really hard to make sure that our guidance is reflected by all of the science that we know and what we have ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Walensky, last question for you. You've got about 30 seconds left here. This is a question I've asked every member of the Biden administration that's been on the show. Regarding schools, do you have a metric or a threshold in mind where if we pass that metric or threshold, schools can completely return to normal and kids can get their lives back?
You know, I think if we have the layer prevention strategies in place, we can do so now. Certainly, I would look to a time in the future soon, I hope, where we can get more and more children vaccinated, lesser and lesser disease, and ideally get those masks off.
Dr. Rochelle Walensky, Director of the CDC, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to hear more voices from across the public health and education landscape about the current state of schools and COVID when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're trying to get a handle on where schools across this country are, and the COVID pandemic feels a little chaotic out there, depending on where you live. A little earlier in the show, we heard from Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the CDC, and now I'd like to bring into the program Dr. Monica Gandhi. She joins us from San Francisco, professor of medicine and associate division chief of the Division of HIV, Infectious Diseases, and Global Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. Dr. Gandhi, welcome back to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Okay, so first and foremost, you heard what Dr. Walensky had to say there regarding CDC guidance and schools. What are your first impressions of what she said?
You know, I think what she said was great. They are really trying. The CDC is trying to change things, I think. I think we have to be fair that the isolation and quarantine guidelines that they changed recently truly is an attempt to keep people more in society with the knowledge of when the virus is transmitted. So I thought that was a great change by the CDC, and she explained it well. I think the one thing I'd say is that you were actually trying to get at this with her, with Dr. Walensky. We really have to remind ourselves how low risk children are for COVID-19, both in this wave, all the waves. Actually, there was recent data with Omicron that children are even lower risk than with Delta, which has been shown across the board in adults and children that Omicron is a less virulent variant. And if we could tone down that fear, because children are so much lower at risk for COVID-19. It's just an epidemiologic fact for severe COVID-19. It's been true throughout the entire pandemic. And teachers are so well protected from their vaccines. And I was hoping that she'd remind us of her incredible CDC MMWR study from January 7th that shows us that if you are less than 75 and don't have multiple comorbidities, you are so well protected from even 2-dose vaccines from severe outcomes.
Yeah.
Then I think we can tone that fear down.
Okay, so let's use some of the actual data that's been gathered over the past 2 years regarding disease transmission in schools, not just between children, but of course adults and children, and children and adults, because we have lots of adults critical to running America's schools as well. So yes. Dr. Gandhi, as I told Dr. Walensky, I was looking at studies CDC itself has pointed to as good evidence, and here are some of them. And then you just tell me afterwards, like, what do you think about what we know regarding transmission in schools? So there's a North Carolina study that found low transmission in schools and no instances of child to adult transmission, even when community transmission was high. There was a study that they pointed to of 20 K-6 schools in Utah at a time of high community transmission still found low in-school transmission. Large evaluation of 9 school districts in Ohio at a time of high community transmission found limited in-school transmission. Similar findings in Washington State, Florida, Chicago, elsewhere. So tell us, what do we know about how COVID moves through schools?
Schools simply are one of the safest places to be for teachers and students. And that's not just shown across this country in all those multiple studies, many of them performed by the CDC, but across the world and in Europe. And it has to do with the fact that it's true that there were mitigation strategies in schools. But even beyond that, the community is really where spread occurs. And that can be brought back into the schools. But really, teacher to student to teacher transmission is extremely rare. And it's just it's a blessing. It's a blessing of COVID. So, I think that we have so much evidence now that schools are such a safe place to be for teachers and students. That was before vaccinations. You just gave data before vaccinations. Mm-hmm. And now we have data after vaccinations. I don't even use the word layered prevention strategy in a way for
for teachers, because I can't think of anything better than being vaccinated for teachers. I think all the others are blown out of the water by being vaccinated. You're so safe.
Well, we also spoke with Dr. David Rubin, a primary care physician and director of the Policy Lab at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He also consults with Philly schools, and they had released some guidance for in-person education in K through 12 settings. And he said that COVID is out there. And in fact, given all that we know about low transmission rates at school, disrupting kids' education or schools in general will not help manage COVID.
Truthfully, we continue to see most of transmission outside of the schools. And the proof central of this is this blew up during the week of Christmas and New Year's when kids were out of school. So the idea that closing schools or disrupting schools at this point in some ways will help us manage this crisis does not consider the fact that this actually occurred when schools were out. And it's not clear now that closing the schools will improve transmission. It may be that sending kids back to homes and intergenerational households may actually do the opposite as kids are in the community. I still believe, and our hospital believes, that schools are a safer location for kids now than other areas of the community, but that we can't avoid risk in any of these locations anymore.
That's Dr. David Rubin in Philadelphia. Dr. Gandhi, we still have districts where there are considerable disagreements about what was just said there. And, you know, unions that want thresholds, for example, of when they can go back to full remote or close schools down. I'll ask you the same question that I asked Dr. Walensky. Do you see, can you think of any circumstance under which that would be appropriate to close schools or revert to remote learning?
You know, I can't think of any circumstance after 2 years of data that shows us that schools are so safe and now we have teacher vaccinations, why we would go back to remote. And on the other side, I would say that the accumulative evidence of the negative consequences of school closures on learning loss, mental health, eating disorders, and just not allowing children to do what is needed, which is really get their education and socialize. I think the cumulative weight of evidence on the other side, on the dangers of school closures, has really over 2 years accumulated, which is why at this point, there's pretty much a balance in public health, including from the Policy Lab, which has been critical to advising from CHOP, from the Children's Hospital of Pennsylvania. What you just said, Dr. Rubin, the weight of evidence is now there's not really a reason to go back to remote school.
Okay. So he then also talked with us a little bit more about what he and his group recommended for in-person education in K through 12 settings. And here's what he said.
The guidance is just very simply, if you're sick, stay home. Isolate yourself. Be mindful of your symptoms. We would require masking during periods of really high seasonal transmission like we're seeing now. So use the masks, and particularly 3-ply masks. Stay home if you're sick. And if you're exposed but asymptomatic, come to school and monitor your symptoms. So long as you're asymptomatic and wearing your mask, you can kind of push on through. We're not a health authority. We're not the CDC. However, there's a real need now for us to begin changing the public's perception about this pandemic as we see a virus transitioning towards one that resembles more of our seasonal viruses, and at a time when we've been offered vaccination and boosters, which are truly the intervention that can take the teeth out of this virus.
Again, that's Dr. David Rubin. And Dr. Gandhi, as you know, you'll notice he said some very key things there, that their guidance, again, he's not CDC, he's the Policy Lab at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, but he said if you're exposed but asymptomatic and wearing a mask, push on through, come to school. And he doesn't mention testing. He does not mention that for students and teachers who may have been exposed but are asymptomatic, because the Policy Lab says, among other things, they recommend discontinue required weekly testing of asymptomatic students, teachers, and staff. What do you think about that?
So what he has just described is essentially normal school with respiratory pathogens. And he is right, Dr. Rubin is right, that we're pushing towards the concept of endemicity with this virus. Now, probably Omicron, we need to get through Omicron to get there. But at that point, there's, you know, quite a bit of evidence that if you essentially this much exposure in the population in the United States is pushing us into endemicity, meaning we're building this wall of immunity
And then we treat it like other respiratory pathogens. What he has just described is normal, that you stay home when you're sick, which is something that I think society and schools are going to be doing much more of than we did in 2018. But that pretty much if you feel well, you come to school. And you don't test weekly, and you don't do asymptomatic testing. And that schools that have done that, for example, I'll give you a good example in California. San Francisco Unified School District didn't do asymptomatic testing. LA Unified School District did. And the San Francisco Unified School District, more children were in school and stayed in school than LA Unified School District. Mm-hmm. What asymptomatic testing, what was the reason for asymptomatic testing to begin with? It was actually before vaccines that it was so important, right? Because essentially, if a child or anyone had some virus in their nose, but they felt well, they could pass it on to someone who was vulnerable and could be susceptible to severe disease. Vaccines have changed that equation so much because of that, not just the CDC study that I referenced from January 7th, but scads of data about how well protected you are with even a two-dose vaccine in adults, and then we have boosters.
Dr. Gandhi, can I just interrupt you? I totally take your point on that, because this is 2022 and not 2020, right?
Right,
but
right.
People listening to you might right now say, but we can't stop testing because then we won't know, how do we do disease surveillance if we're not testing, especially in places like schools?
So what Dr. Rubin is saying is used the right word, disease surveillance, and not whether the COVID virus is in your nose or not, right? So there's a difference between exposure and disease. And when we say that there's disease in our community, usually the word disease used to refer to clinical manifestations. That was the infectious disease term. And again, the asymptomatic testing with COVID was prior to vaccines. That was terribly important. So it's a difference between asymptomatic testing and symptomatic testing. No one's saying don't symptomatic test. And in fact, probably going forward in schools, children will be if they're ill, they will be symptomatically tested for influenza, parainfluenza, RSV, and COVID-19, so that things, and they'll stay home. And same with adults.
Yeah.
So it is testing, but it isn't testing when you feel well.
Okay. So Dr. Gandhi, hang on here for just a second, because of course there are lots of stakeholders when it comes to schools in America. So we wanted to reach out and hear from some teachers as well. And we went to the city of Chicago for that, because as you and many listeners might know, the Chicago Teachers Union and Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot had this month engaged in a very highly acrimonious dispute. A couple of days after students returned from winter break, the union voted to return to remote instruction instead of in-person instruction, and most of its members refused to enter school buildings. Again, this was earlier in January, in this month. The district responded by locking teachers out of the remote teaching platforms. It got pretty bad. The head of the Chicago Teachers Union called Mayor Lightfoot, quote, relentlessly stupid. The mayor responded by accusing the union of abandoning students. And meanwhile, as the adults were fighting, the district's 330,000 children lost a full week of learning. But an agreement was reached and the district reopened on January 12th. So Katie Osgood is a special education teacher who works with first through third graders in a Chicago public school. She's also an executive board member at the CTU. And she told us that COVID protocols are still chaotic for both educators and families in Chicago public schools.
When kids test positive, they're supposed to report, self-report. The families have to self-report through a site. Then CPS is supposed to do some contact tracing and reaches out to the principals, who then help with that process. Principals are given the leeway to flip a class remote while we're waiting for contact tracing. But even that process of reporting and then CPS getting back to the principals takes time. So what often actually happens in reality is things get reported word of mouth, and principals are having to make decisions with no time to really inform parents in advance. And so what is actually happening is that we're getting these notifications very late. We often have to send kids home midday, or the kids are already on the way to school when they get the notification, which means we have to go through a process of calling every single parent, saying, come get your children that were exposed, because any child that was exposed to the COVID positive student needs to go into quarantine.
exposed there, she says. In Chicago public schools, though, vaccinated students do not need to quarantine right now. And Osgood says that's helpful but inadequate.
So what we're seeing is some kids being told they can stay. Some kids, oh, we don't have your vaccination records on file yet. You haven't, you know, the parent maybe didn't know they were supposed to upload something, you know, their vaccination card. And so it ends up being this chaotic process of like, who can go, who can stay? Okay, you were exposed Tuesday, but you were exposed on Thursday. So you're out until next Wednesday and you're out until next Friday.
Now, the agreement reached by the Chicago Teachers Union and the Chicago Public Schools, the district, includes safety metrics that call for closing individual school campuses and shifting them to remote learning if 30% of teachers are absent for two consecutive days or 40% of students are in quarantine. When schools stay open, children who have to go into quarantine have the option of remote learning, but Osgood says that teaching both in person and online just isn't feasible.
It's a model that does not work, and it's very confusing. And honestly, everyone is just running around pulling their hair out most of the time as these cases come up.
Now, one more thing. Chicago Public Schools and the union were not able to agree on a major union demand, a testing program that would automatically sign up students and require parental opt-out if they didn't want to participate. The union did agree to work with the district to boost testing with a goal of achieving 100% participation by February 1st. Osgood maintains that the lack of testing in the district is a problem, partly because of kids coming out of quarantine do not need to test to return to school.
Once they finish their quarantine, they're allowed to come back. There's no test to return. So we have no idea if kids had it. We have no idea if they'd spread it amongst their own family. Like, there's no one following up on that question. Our mayor and our top doctor in the city, Dr. Awadi, have both been saying that there's no evidence of spread in schools. And we're kind of like, you have never looked for spread in schools. You're not following up with anyone that gets sent home after having been exposed.
That's Katie Osgood, a member of the Chicago Teachers Union. Dr. Gandhi, we have about 30 seconds before we have to take this next break, but your response to what Osgood has said there.
You know, what has just been described is really chaotic. I totally agree. This is pandemic management as opposed to endemic management, and we are in a transition phase. Mm-hmm. Harvard School has already said that they will not do asymptomatic testing or contact tracing in the spring. The Marin County District here is not doing asymptomatic testing or contact tracing to keep children in school. So it is that transition to endemic because teachers are so protected from vaccines. But right now we're not there, and it's a mess.
Well, we are talking today with Dr. Monica Gandhi. She is a professor of medicine and infectious diseases and global medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. We're trying to figure out what's going on in schools regarding this phase of the COVID pandemic. And we'll have more when we come back. This is On Point.
Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE SIPC.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Today, we're trying to make sense of what's happening in America's schools right now in this phase of the COVID pandemic. I'm joined today by Dr. Monica Gandhi. She's a professor of medicine and associate division chief at the Division of HIV, Infectious Disease, and Global Medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. Dr. Gandhi, we're getting a lot of good questions coming in online from listeners here, so let's just dive into a couple of them. Aaron Palicki asks, what about if there aren't enough teachers and staff to run the schools? What happens then? So I'm gonna pick up on her question and add this, Dr. Gandhi. My understanding is that, for example, in some hospitals right now in the United States, medical workers who test positive but are asymptomatic can still go to work in some hospitals, whereas we have schools where adults may test positive, are asymptomatic, but they have to be outside of the school for 5 or 10 days. Can you make sense of that?
Right. So that was the attempt by the CDC and Dr. Lunsky to change these guidelines such that if you are asymptomatic and you're vaccinated, so that would be a teacher or a healthcare worker, that you can go to work with a well-fitted mask. And why is that? Because actually, there was a Delta breakthrough study in Italy during the time that there were staff shortages, because Delta breakthroughs also created staff shortages. And all the healthcare workers were asymptomatic, tested one day. The next day, this was in Annals of Internal Medicine, they were all negative. And then the third day, they were all negative. Because when you're asymptomatic and you're vaccinated, your viral load comes down very quickly and you really aren't infectious. So that was the reason to change it for healthcare workers. I'm working in a hospital right now, and it's, you know, that really has saved us the ability to come to work when we're asymptomatic wearing a good mask. So the teachers could do that per the CDC guidelines if they're vaccinated. And that would really allow teachers and staff to be there, and they wouldn't be spreading it.
But there are districts where that clearly is not happening.
Right, right. Again, I truly think this. I think that we created a culture of fear that was understandable. This was a really scary virus. And what happened is that I don't think we've touted how well protected you are being a vaccinated older individual. You really are protected from the scary thing about COVID-19, which is severe disease, 0.00003 chance of a COVID death. That's 4 zeros, chance of a COVID death if you are even 2-dose vaccinated, and now we have boosters. Only those over 75 with 4 comorbidities are at risk for those severe outcomes. And those, they right now with Omicron, I would not be, you know, teaching if you're in those conditions, over 75 for comorbidities. So really, it's an amazingly effective vaccine. And I think that could be what's happening, is we don't tout the effectiveness of the vaccines. We say layered prevention strategy, but vaccines are really get us to that safe place. So I think it could be that we still have a culture of fear in some settings, but not healthcare worker settings where we've seen the effectiveness of the vaccines.
I mean, could be. I think it definitely is. I will put a much more active verb on it.
It was created over 2 years, though. This kind of, you and I have been talking, and many people have been talking over 2 years, this culture of fear was created over 2 years. We've got to walk that back.
Yeah. And again,
and really talk about it.
Again, if we were time traveling back to 2020 or even early 2021, I feel like, of course, much of that fear was justified. But things are different now, and yet it's still very – people truly, deeply feel it, and especially in school settings. I mean, we have another comment here from Darcy who says things are changing in her district now. More general notifications, quarantine and testing only if symptoms are present. Shortage of subs in a community that denies COVID. She feels that no one, teachers feel that no one with any power to protect us cares about us, our health, or our mental health. I do not feel safe in my classroom. So that's still very real. And I don't know what do you think can be done to advance actually some of the science and data that we've been talking about this hour about this relative safety of schools?
You know, I think what happened, and I've seen this since the vaccines came out, is that these phrases that mitigation is layered and it's just one tool, I think we haven't, again, told people how well protected they are from what. Why was COVID so scary? Of course it was scary, because it could cause severe disease. And yes, there are mild breakthrough infections that are more mild with Omicron, even if you're vaccinated. But that wasn't ever what we were trying to protect society from, was mild infections. And we have very good data now that just from 2 days ago that long COVID symptoms don't occur if you're vaccinated and have a mild breakthrough infection. This was a recent study published from Israel, because your immune system prevents those kind of symptoms. So we really are protecting people from severe disease. That's why we had to shut down society, mass distance, ventilate. We had to contact trace test. We had to do that. And then we got the vaccines. And I think what could be happening is we don't tout their effectiveness enough. And Dr. Walensky was on the news 2.5 weekends ago, I think, talking about the CDC study, how incredibly well protected you are with this MMWR study from the severe outcomes of COVID with even 2-dose vaccination. And it was misunderstood. It was somehow, when she talked about it, it was misunderstood that she was saying there's still some people at risk, and there are still some people at risk for severe breakthroughs, and that's the population we have to protect.
Yeah.
We have to, but they're not usually students and teachers.
Okay, some more really good questions coming in here. Angela Ferrari asks, the Massachusetts Department of Elementary and Secondary Education does not currently give guidance for test and stay that includes vaccinated children, and Angela's wondering if including those children is crucial for test and stay to be effective.
So the CDC, you know, the isolation and quarantine guidelines do not say that. Well, they say if you're vaccinated and boosted, you don't have to test. And then essentially you're right that children aren't eligible for boosting. So they need to, if they've been exposed, then they should be able to test and stay in school. But the reason that they gave that idea that you could actually, if you're exposed, just wear a mask for the next 10 days is because sometimes testing isn't accessible. And like you just said, that's what we've done in healthcare worker settings, and it's been fine. So masks work as well.
Okay, well, let's go back to what Dr. Rubin in Philadelphia at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia says about how to change what his recommendations on how to change protocols in schools as the COVID pandemic evolves.
The sheer number of kids who have had infection and who've been exposed, you can't trace it anymore. I think contact tracing works best when you have a low, a virus that's circulating at low levels that obviously was dangerous last year when it was at lower levels. A way to eliminate exposure risk is to contact trace and quarantine individuals. Well, that no longer is practical or possible in terms of moving forward.
Now, Dr. Gandhi, I think we're actually sort of seeing this organically happen,
right?
That organizations are not really requiring vigorous contact, that had required them maybe stepping back from their requirements of vigorous contact tracing.
Right. We're seeing that. So again, Marin County here and many school districts have stopped contact tracing. Harvard announced that they would stop in the spring. And that's because it's endemic. And I think that phrase endemicity just means that the virus is here to stay, can't be eradicated, not because we weren't good enough or human enough, we didn't do enough, because of features of the virus. Luckily, we've defanged the virus. We've taken away, by vaccination in adults, its ability to cause severe disease. And yes, we have the child vaccines down to 5. And I, like Dr. Walensky, encourage people to get their children vaccinated. But in an endemic infection, we don't contact trace our way out of it. We can't. It's there. But what we do is ensure that people who are ill stay home. That's what we do with influenza in 2018. If you remember, we weren't supposed to send our children to school who were ill. And we don't test and contact trace for those who are feeling well. That isn't the strategy that's employed. And that's what Dr. Rubin is saying. We're at that point.
Okay. So going back to this idea of layered mitigation, a phrase that you don't want us to use anymore, but I'm going to use it anyway, as Dr. Walensky did. We've got a couple of good questions here about mask mandates in schools. Folks want to know, what are the statistics of schools with mask mandates versus those without?
You know, it's a great question, actually, because there was a study by the CDC and the MMWR from Georgia that showed, that you, I think you mentioned, that showed that it wasn't student masking. It was actually teacher masking that was helpful. And this is before vaccinations. There was a study from Arizona that showed that both teachers and students were masking was helpful, but that study actually had methodologic flaws in it. And so that number probably isn't as clear. There are many countries, as you know, who do not mask young children. The WHO does not recommend masking below 5. There are some countries that never masked below 12. And it's kind of, the data is kind of all over the place. So I think to put it very cleanly, I don't think anyone wants children indefinitely masked in schools. And Joe Allen, who you had commented upon before, is encouraging us to move to a strategy of, he's the doctor at Harvard School of Chan of Public Health, where we remember that one-way masking works so that, for example, anyone who is at risk for a very vulnerable, at risk for a severe breakthrough, or anyone who wants no exposure at all should wear a proper mask. And the CDC has really been great about that and telling us what proper masks are, which are more KN95s, FFP2s, KF94s, double masks. And if they want no exposure, that protects them, but not everyone, because we now have vaccinations. I don't know when the time is to release masks for kids, but I think it's going to be after the Omicron surge.
Okay. Oh, you anticipated my question.
Oh, I am, because endemicity means we never masked children for respiratory pathogens prior to this. And we were waiting for the endemicity declaration of this virus. And what's going to get us there is a highly transmissible and less virulent variant. So I think after the Omicron surge, we'll probably go to mask optional. And I think the CDC is hinting that with telling us the right kinds of masks if you don't want any exposure.
Interesting. Okay. So I'm running out of time here, but I want to get a teacher voice back in here. So again, we reached out to the city of Chicago. They've been having a tough time there. And you heard a little earlier from Katie Osgood, executive board member at the Chicago Teachers Union. And she laments that even though they reached an agreement after 5 days of not being in school, that the district and the union couldn't agree on a demand that the union had about testing, that all staff and students entering Chicago public schools would be tested regardless of symptoms after the holiday break.
This is a demand that the mayor and our district did not give us, but the demand was to have 100%, you know, kind of like before you get on an airplane for an international flight, everyone has to have a negative test in their hand, right? You know, just to kind of have a baseline to make sure that we're not starting off from many, many kids coming in COVID positive, right? So yeah, that was absolutely one of our big demands. And I think it would have helped a lot with this chaos that we're seeing of another exposure. Oh, another kid has COVID, because it started from day one, the first day we got back. And in that short time, we saw so many cases starting to explode across the district. And if we had just tested everyone, that wouldn't have happened.
Chicago Public Schools currently has an opt-in testing system. Parents and guardians have to give their consent. By mid-December of last year, only 16% of students had signed up, according to the education news organization Chalkbeat Chicago. So again, here's CTU member Katie Osgood.
Without testing 100% or as close to 100% as you can get, we don't know who's positive and who's not, right? We don't know who's just pre-symptomatic or... you know, who just has, I mean, kids are kids, right? They have their little snotty noses and their coughs. And it's really hard to, you know, for us as teachers, we're supposed to send them home. But, you know, some kids just kind of have a runny nose all winter. Did those kids not do school? You know, so really without the testing piece, we're missing a lot of information.
Interesting, because it would seem from our conversation thus far that snotty nose would count as symptomatic and would probably do well with testing here. Well, another union member, Adon Meza, teaches at a high school in Chicago, and he told us that a lack of testing in the district has really thrown teachers for a loop.
We understand the schools are understaffed. We understand that these students need someone in front of them and they need a right to their education, but teachers just didn't feel safe. And we were essentially told there might be people who are positive here. We don't know. It was very much a sense of not really knowing what to do. So it was a very much take care of yourself and hope for the best is the feeling I got when I was in those classrooms.
And he says he knows parents and others may be upset with the union for keeping students at home during that school closure in January.
The problem is that the consequences of this are literally life and death, especially in Black and Brown communities like Pilsen, where people live in multifamily units. There's a great age variety in those families. And what happens with COVID is it kills people. It's not like something that's inconveniencing us for a day. It's the idea that like we need to make sure we're safe. And what that means is that we all need to get these resources.
That's Adan Meza, union member and teacher at Chicago High School, a Chicago high school. We also heard from Katie Osgood, an executive board member of the Chicago Teachers Union. Dr. Monica Gandhi, we've just got about a minute left here. I'd like to ask you if you could do a little bit more of what you had done a minute or two ago. Look forward a bit, because I thought if I heard you correctly, you said that, do you anticipate CDC changing masking guidance in schools?
So this is what I think they're going towards. I'm just sort of reading the writing on the wall. So this last weekend, they really did a great job on saying which masks work, which are these KN95s, FFP2s, double masking, what we just talked about, KF94s mm-hmm. and 95s. And the idea is that that's one-way protection. That really protects you. With an endemic virus, we are not going to all be able to not be exposed. There is going to be exposure. And we're so well protected by our vaccines. And there are groups that are not as well protected because of the immune system, immunocompromised. And again, those older individuals with for comorbidities like my father. So he's going to have to wear a really good mask. But in an endemic virus, it's not going to be that we can prevent all exposure, but luckily we can prevent disease. And that's the vaccines. And so we need to move towards an endemic model after Omicron surge.
Given the fear that's clearly still out there, I can't imagine that's going to be any easier than...
This is not the time.
...than yeah. any other part of this pandemic. Well, Dr. Monica yeah. Gandhi at the University of California, San Francisco, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.